Accession number 18701, Reel 3.
Mr. Law, Reel 3.
No duties to get in the way of the wonderful South African hospitality to servicemen. So, a very enjoyable time. But then, one day we were ordered down to the docks at Simonstown, where there's a dirty old tramp steamer waiting. We were ushered on board. Name was the SS Glenroy. She'd been bombed while in Alexandria Harbour, been raised, and her holds had been filled with concrete to seal up the holes and stabilise. And there wasn't a lot of room left for fuel. So when we sailed, we had to stop at every possible place for refuelling. The first stop was, I think, Walvis Bay, Namibia. Then Pointe Noire in French Equatorial Africa. Then Accra, Gold Coast, Ghana as it is now. And then off into the wide blue yonder, the Atlantic. We headed for the Azores. We stopped in the Azores. Gain for fuel, and then last lap was from the Azores to Cardiff. While we were somewhere out about the Bay of Biscay, we were notified by radio that there were a number of German U-boats in the area, so we all wore our life belts and slept on the upper deck. One night, or very early morning, there was an explosion, a terrific bang. We all thought, oh, this is it, torpedoes. But it wasn't a torpedo. It was just the engine blowing up. One of the cylinders had exploded, leaving us with only about half power. The engineers eventually got it going again, and we set off, I think it's about 8 knots maximum. Fortunately, no further incident, and we eventually reached Cardiff in a drizzly, cold morning, and that was me home again.
Which month was this, do you think?
I think it was February, I'm not sure.
43?
Yeah.
Where did you do the training to be a radio engineer?
In the Southwest Essex Technical College. For 6 months. That's at Walthamstow. East London.
You see anything of enemy air attacks there?
No, no. And then, after the theoretical training, we went for practical training on the equipments to HMS Ariel, which is a naval establishment near Warrington.
What kind of equipment were you working on there?
The first step was aircraft radio equipment, communications equipment. We were expected to qualify both in radio and radar, but the radar course came sometime later. Oh, I did the communications part first. And that was another, I think it was 6 months altogether at Ariel. And from there, I was drafted to Arbroath.
For what purpose?
The radio workshops, maintaining and repairing radio equipment for 783 Squadron, which is a communications training squadron. I was a bit disappointed there because all the radio mechanics at the time, they're all volunteers, hostilities only. I was one of the very, very few regular ratings. And my squadron CO recommended me to apply for a commission, which I did. I passed the technical board and applied for to be entered as a CW candidate.
What does CW mean?
Commission and Warrants, I think it was, to be set on the rota for officer training. However, that meant going in front of the captain to be approved. And when my request went into the captain, a letter came back to the squadron saying, as this rating is serving on a continuous service engagement, he is ineligible for consideration for a temporary commission. There were only temporary commissions in this branch at the time. Until 1945, at the end of the war, when all these hostilities only officers departed, or most of them, into civilian life, and the Navy was left without any officers in the branch at all. So they offered a lot of these temporary officers permanent commissions. So I found myself bypassed again and being officered by these temporary people who I'd been refused to join. And I felt it rather unjust that I'd been bypassed twice, although I'd been recommended for commissioning.
Were you in Arbroath when the war ended?
No, just before the war ended, I was moved and sent to Egypt, where I was on an air station in the Suez Canal Zone, where we were employed in stripping out aircraft from old aircraft, creating it all up and sent to Malta. Eventually the station was closed down and all the personnel were also sent to Malta. We found that all the stuff that we'd been creating up was being ditched in the sea or destroyed. A complete waste of time. And in Malta, it was a waste of time because we just carried on doing the same sort of thing, stripping out radio and radar from aircraft. I never heard what happened to it, but it was either obsolescent or obsolete, so I don't think it was used again.
So you stayed on in the Navy for some years after the war?
Yes, I'd signed on for 12 years, so my time would have expired in 1951. 1951 came and all releases were halted because the Korean War had broken out. So I was kept on involuntarily until 1952.
How did you feel about that?
Well, didn't like it, but it had to be accepted. Quite a number of people were in the same boat. But I wasn't encouraged to sign on after that period.
Why not?
Well, because of the way I'd been pushed around, not allowed to. By this time, I was a chief petty officer. I'd risen to the top of the pile, as it were. I'd been a chief instructor, again back at Ariel, teaching new entrants their trade. I had three quite happy years at Ariel. I thought I'd finish my time there, and just less than a year to go, they sent me up to Macrahanish on the Muluk in Tyre. Because there was an air station that had been disused since the end of the war, put on a care and maintenance basis, and they wanted to reignite it, as it were. So we had to set up workshops and prepare to maintain aircraft.
How do you feel now about having served in the Royal Navy?
I wouldn't have missed it. I'm glad I joined. I had some good times, in spite of the horrors of war. But generally speaking, I didn't have any cause to complain.